Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
You have just tuned in to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing. Yes, once again, it's 3GT time, and we're glad you're here. This is Barry York, the president of Reformed Presbyterian Theological Seminary in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, though I am recording this episode in the Garden House. And I am joined, as always, with my good friends and co-hosts, Scott Hunt from Marion, Indiana, who serves as the parishioner on this podcast, as well as Kyle Borg from Winchester, Kansas, who is our pastor extraordinaire. So we're glad you two you two men are with me. And what's wrong? I just
wonder if we could rewind that. The whole, you know, pastor extraordinaire is making me blush.
Yeah, well, matches your sweater. Your face does. Well, guys, we like to receive communications from our listeners. Sometimes they suggest topics to us, and we actually received one from a young gentleman, and he wants to ask a question that we'll consider for our topic today, but I'm actually a little bit more intrigued just as we begin with his PS, because he brought up something that I don't know what he's talking about, so I figured you guys could further enlighten me. I'm always a step or two behind the cultural.
That's generous.
That's as generous as you call
real generous.
The culture.
That's as generous as you calling Kyle pastor extraordinaire.
Barry's obsessed lately with quoting Jefferson Airplane. And Barry, do you realize that they were active 60 years ago?
Wow.
Wow.
That's about when I started being active. So, well, in this PS, it had a question for Kyle, and what he's asking is if your Be Real, it's all one word, if your Be Real ever went off while we're recording 3GTs, what does that even mean? Your Be Real?
Yeah. What, Scott, what do you think of Scott? Do you know anything about Be Real?
So I know very, very little of it.
Okay.
I know it's like, it's a social media thing, not unlike, I guess, Snapchat or Instagram or something.
Oh, don't insult Be Real in that. Okay, so Be Real is a social media app that was released in 2020. It's French. It's not Chinese. For everybody worried, it's just the French gathering all kinds of information on us.
Wait, if it's French, what's the French name?
Be Real. I don't know. I have no idea. So the point of Be Real, and Barry, you noted that it's one word, because that's, you know, that's the trendy thing to do when you have social media, just make it one word. But the aim of Be Real is that every day you get a daily notification that encourages you to share a photo of yourself in your immediate surroundings. So like, if you know that on some social media apps like Instagram, like Snapchat, both of which have been referenced just now, you know, there's a lot of people that get criticized because they go to great lengths to pose their pictures, which really takes the realistic element out. And Be Real is a social media app that's really kind of intended to combat that. So every day at a random time, I get a notification, and Be Real users, if they want to post on time, have 2 minutes to take a picture from when that notification goes off. You can still post late, but then it tells everybody, you know, Kyle was late in the posting of this picture. So the whole point is to just post a picture of yourself within your immediate surroundings. So at any time of the day, and they usually plan it, it's usually not when you're sleeping. It's usually, I think the latest I've had is 11:30 p.m., earliest, sometimes it's first thing in the morning, but your phone buzzes or it beeps, however you have it set, and the countdown starts. You've got 2 minutes to get a real picture of yourself in your surroundings. So I got this now almost almost 2 years ago, I think. I got it pretty early on for United States users. Like when I got it, all my high schoolers, I sometimes try to follow social media so that my high schoolers think I'm really cool. And I got Be Real and I was like, hey guys, did you buy this new social media thing? Be Real. It's going to be so cool. And they were like, that sounds stupid. Like none of us even know anything, but it is now. Now it is a very popular social media app. I rode the wave. I'm so proud of myself, but my kids love it. Because then they've added an aspect that if you get your picture taken on time within those 2 minutes, you get two more postings for the day. So my girls love this app. And whenever it goes off, they say, oh, can I get the Be Real picture? And then they go and do whatever. So that's the Be Real. So the question is, has the buzzer ever gone off?
I want to understand this before you tell
this. This isn't hard, Barry. This isn't hard.
So you take a picture and it goes up. And who sees your picture and whose pictures do you see?
The French. No, it's you have your network. So you have your friends. So I think I've got like 70 friends or something that I'm connected with on Be Real. And then you get to scroll through and see what everybody is doing around their immediate surroundings. So it's kind of fun.
Yeah, I just have all kinds of concern. It reminds me of a story I heard really recently about some guy who called a house and asked, hey, can I talk to your dad? You know, the kid was real.
Yeah.
Can't talk right now. I mean, what happens if you're in a compromising situation?
Yeah.
Kyle?
So if you're in a compromising situation, you just remove yourself from the compromising situation as fast as you possibly can. Cause you don't.
I mean, think about this poor guy in Winchester who was hiding in a boat today.
Well, right. Right.
Be like, real. What would he do?
Cops are arresting him. He's got to take a picture. So, right. There are compromising moments where you're like, oh, this isn't good. And you can either decide to post late or you just hurry up and put yourself in a non-compromising situation to get your picture. So the question is, not that this episode was supposed to be all about Be Real. The question is, has my Be Real notification ever gone off while recording this podcast? And I can say it has not, but I was recording another podcast this morning when my Be Real went off.
Oh, wow.
And I did get a picture. So
we're not on this app. And if you ever do this, you need to get our signed written permission.
Okay. Yeah. That's helpful.
Did you hear, I played it in French. Can you hear this? Did you hear that?
Yeah, that's basically what I said, right?
Etre vie.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. So, you know, maybe just a shout out to our listeners. If you want to find me on Be Real, I am Rural Pastor. I follow back. So if you want to follow me, check me out on Be Real.
Well, we learn something new every day.
Oh, wow.
Well, that actually was not the concern of our listener. This is a young fellow, and his name is Miguel, and he was wondering, he's in college, he loves football, he also loves the Lord, he was wanting us to speak to the whole idea. He says he sees fellow Christians who have a high view of the Sabbath day. They'll watch professional football like on Monday night or Thursday night, but some of them don't watch it on the Lord's days. Others may do that. He talks about how the catechism says that on the Lord's day, we are to keep ourselves from worldly employments and recreations as are on the other days lawful. But he said he would like to hear our thoughts because he has a hard time with his conscience on this issue. And he doesn't want to be legalistic, but he also wants to seek the whole counsel of God. So we thought, this came in actually after the Super Bowl and after the NFL season when a lot of thoughts and emotions can be high about this. So now that it's all past us, maybe we can have more of a reasonable conversation about it. And I think maybe we could expand this to not just only talk about the subject of football on the Lord's Day, but what about delighting in the Sabbath day outside the worship services? How are we to go about that? I think I'd like to see us expand that. So let's go ahead and talk a little bit about the football issue and then go on and we'll talk more about What should we be encouraging as leaders in the church? Are people to be, how should they be using the Sabbath day so that, as it says at the end of Isaiah 58, that they can actually call the Sabbath a delight?
Yeah, so specifically to this question, you know, well, I live in Kansas, and of course, the Kansas City Chiefs have done exceedingly well over the last number of seasons, and they, of course, were the Super Bowl champions again this year.
How do you know that, Kyle? Kyle, how do you know that?
I follow the news.
He follows Taylor Swift. It's because he follows Taylor Swift is how he knows.
Taylor Swift on Be Real.
You know, you guys, I'm trying to like have a good, useful dialogue, and you're making light of these things is inappropriate right now. So but it is a big question. And I have to admit, as a pastor, you know, the football season is so irritating to me. And especially, you know, in the Super Bowl, when the home team is playing, not so much, you know, my church, we had evening worship over the Super Bowl, and I think 90% of our regular attenders were back for it. So I was encouraged by that. But, you know, just the whole culture and the whole atmosphere. And I know I talked to several area pastors around that time, and they were really frustrated as well. How quickly so many Christians, you know, will drop everything for the sake of a football game, including church. And you know, the priority that is often put on sports is sometimes not shared by Christians when it comes to the church and worship and even keeping the Lord's Day. But specific to the question that's been asked, you know, it's a good question. I think one of the useful things to keep in mind is that the NFL has very, very, very intentionally set aside Sundays to be football Sundays. And not to rehearse the whole history of that, but, you know, professional football, from my understanding, really began in about 1920. And during that time, college football was a massively popular sport. It was more popular than professional football. But college football played on Saturdays. And so as professional football began to develop, they knew that they could not compete with the popularity of college football, and realized that because of blue laws, Sundays were pretty wide open for the public. Because in those days, and let's bring back blue laws, if you want to talk about the descent of society, but the blue laws meant Sundays were wide open. And professional football saw that as a good opportunity. And more than that, they, as professional football developed, especially with the television and televising these events, they realized, you know, Sundays are a phenomenal day to televise all of these things. And then, you know, it was, when was it? Barry was probably alive, but in 1961, Congress passed the Sports Broadcasting Act, where they were dealing with, you know, how do we televise sports? And professional football for 17 weeks in the year is not legally allowed to broadcast on Fridays because of high school football. They're not allowed to broadcast on Saturdays because of college football. And the NFL came to realize Sundays are a great day. We round out the whole weekend now with this game, this sport of football. And my point in all of that, and there's probably more history to get into, but professional football is played on Sundays for a very, very specific reason. And as professional football became more and more popular, it's not surprising that the blue laws that protected Sabbath observance have decreased and now all but disappeared. And the tragedy is that, you know, as I remember this being reported once by a journalist said, football is America's religion. And when you look especially at the NFL is an institutionalized system complete with its gods and its temples and its shrines, its devoted followers, its cult-like traditions and ceremonies, its laws and ordinances, and it even has its own holy day, which happens to be Sunday. So as Christians, we need to think about that. Like we need to think about, you know, that's part of the reality as we work through this conscientious question. The NFL very intentionally hijacks Sundays from being a day of Sabbath rest, being a day of blue laws, and look at the empire they've built around that.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned blue laws, and we were talking about this before we got on the air here. You still have a bit of a remnant of a blue law there in Winchester, don't you? That the RP Church had.
That's my understanding.
Influence.
That's my. So I think the local gas station, the owner applied for a liquor license in the late 90s. And that was still when the RPCNA did their whole temperance movement and total abstinence from alcohol. And our temperance committee raised a ruckus when the application went through for the liquor license. And at the end of the day, the gas station owner went forward and got his liquor license. But the agreement he entered into was, out of respect for the Reformed Presbyterians, alcohol cannot be sold in the gas station on Sundays. And I know that from not personal experience, but personal reports, that they will not sell. Of course, they only sell beer. I don't think they sell any. That's what their liquor license is used for. But you can't buy beer in the gas station on Sundays, out of deference and respect to the Reformed Presbyterians.
And these kind
chewing
of
gum is allowed. Then.
What'd you say, Scott?
Nothing. Chewing gum is allowed.
Chewing gum is allowed. I'm sure.
Yeah, these blue laws though were so much more common, of course, in early American history, where the Lord's Day was more honored. But I think what you're raising, Kyle, is very important to see that the NFL has been very deliberate in choosing a particular day to gather their following. And I, when you were talking, I was recalling when Dr. Scipione was alive and teaching at RPTS a time or two in chapel, he would remind us that the biggest church in Pittsburgh was the Steelers Stadium, Heinz Stadium, because that's where the most devoted followers were to be found. And I do think that, though obviously worldly recreation sports have their particular place, I think we would view pretty consistently here on this podcast between the three of us that watching football or entering into that kind of a recreational pleasure on the Lord's Day really isn't the intent for the day. Would you guys agree?
I do. And, yeah. And I would say, you know, just for the record, it's not because, you know, I'm not the most athletic person. And I readily admit that, like, I'm not a huge sports player, but it's not out of like some inherent hatred for sports. You know, in my college years, I watched the Minnesota Vikings every Sunday. I really enjoyed it. And my son and I, we watch Monday night football. We watch Thursday night football when we can. And so it's not out of an inherent hate. It's out of a respect for what I think God does require of us that day. And I think that watching football on Sunday, watching professional football on Sunday, I think is sinful.
I recall when I first came into the Reformed Presbyterian Church as a newly married graduate student at Purdue University, I just grew up watching football every Sunday, and I would come home from church and watch during the afternoon and then go back into the evening service and start talking to people about the game or whatever, and was met with a lot of blank stares. And I began to realize that that's not how everybody else had been spending their time. And it was humbling, but also very sanctifying to say, well, what do you do on that day? And I begin to hear that they, you know, had people over and they went on walks and they read books, and there was already a jail ministry started there that's continued on for 40 years, visiting people in jail on Sunday and sharing Christ with them. And people now in that church are actually, there are families in that church who were formerly incarcerated. So it's just fun to see, the other side of it, that there are ways that we can delight in the Lord's Day and give up some of our earthly delights and pleasures on that day in order to experience even greater things. And I got taught that as I came into the church.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's so important. You know, a lot of us as Christians, we look at our current cultural context and we bemoan, you know, the descent in sexual morality around us. And yet, as Christians, you know, I wonder how many of us really do lament the fact, you know, the Sabbath command, one day in seven, to rest and to cease. It is positive law in the sense that it's revealed in the scriptures, but it's natural too. Like it's woven into our creation, and it's anti-created order to just go, you know, we interviewed Daniel Howe, so I don't want to repeat everything, but he, you know, it's enslavement to not take a break from these things one day in seven as God has appointed. And, you know, we should, Walter Chantry's little book, Call the Sabbath a Delight, you know, his introduction is, you wonder why society is where it is. One of the reasons is the abandoning of the Sabbath. It is this, you know, this driving us to exhaustion, abandoning the law of God. So, you know, it's a little, I too mourn the decline of sexual morality, but as Christians, we need to be equal offenders, so to speak. And we should mourn that our culture has rapidly changed in the last half century on things like this.
I think one of the things you think of, go ahead, Scott.
So you think of how Isaiah, when he's prophesying there's all kinds of things, all kinds of sin in Israel. But one of the things he mentions is, you know, if you turn your foot away from doing your own work on the Sabbath and call the Sabbath a delight, you know, then the Lord will come and restore the land. I mean, in a lot of ways, I'm not suggesting one led to the other, but when you stop observing the Sabbath, when you don't give it the due regard, then it allows all kinds of sin to creep in. Gluttony, covetousness, all those kind of things can come in from a lack of observing the Sabbath. And you know, the one thing is, I don't think people think about it anymore either. It's just kind of the Sabbath is my day of rest. It's for me to do what I want to do. But when you watch like the NFL, I mean, we are employing people. And I think we as Americans don't realize this, but you know, every app that we get download free, every TV show that we watch, we are employing people. They are selling us, right? We are the good that's being sold. We are selling ourselves. And so when we watch the Super Bowl, we are selling ourselves to these advertisers. They're buying our time. And so it's not like we are, you know, participating in an inactive way. We are actively participating in the culture when we give into those things. When you go to a store, when you go to a restaurant, when you do those things, you are employing people. And the Lord says, you and your servant shall observe the Sabbath day. So I think there's a real danger in us even saying, well, this is just a passive activity, because it's not. The reality is, we are equally participating in these activities, in the business, in the merchants, with what they're selling on the Sabbath day when we participate in that.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I want to point out is, you know, this is the first commandment that's not stated in the negative. It starts off with the word remember, or in Deuteronomy, observe the Sabbath day. And when we don't remember it, when we don't remember the Sabbath day, then we're going to forget the Lord of the Sabbath. And that's what you men are pointing out. And then that just causes the whole of the church and society to decay. And we fall into the idolatry that we see now, where people are enthralled with who's going to perform at the halftime show at the Super Bowl and speak about it incessantly for weeks afterward, but their minds are not captivated with Christ. And that's what we really want to encourage. And we do want to make this, and we've had other episodes where we've dealt with Sabbath issues, but on this particular one, we want to really go on now and talk about the delighting outside the worship service. Of course, that's so important, and we've regularly addressed matters of worship. But as elders and pastors, how do we encourage our members, when they leave the church building, to delight in the Sabbath? What should they be doing? Because I think it takes some intentionality to go home and know what they should actually be doing. It's easy to turn on the TV. And so if we don't want them to do the easy thing, what are some things we should be encouraging them to do?
I think first and foremost, and this is something we try to practice in our own home, you know, it's a wonderful thing to gather as the people of God for worship. That has the priority on the Lord's Day. You know, you think of Revelation 1:10, John is taken in the Spirit on the Lord's Day, and the very thing that he is ushered into is the epicenter of heaven's worship, the heavenly worship service that is happening. That is by far the highlight and the benefit and the pinnacle of the day. All the better for morning and evening worship to frame the whole of the day in the worship of God. But it's a blessing as well to gather together outside of public worship and to fellowship with one another, you know, to be an encouragement. You know, we have found, you know, a lot of people live their lives and we're all very busy. And we've got 6 days to do all of our work and all of our labor. And for many people in the church, that is going from sun up to sun down, and it doesn't leave a lot of time for other things. And we have found that the Lord's Day is a wonderful day for hospitality. You know, no excuse can be given because I'm not going to have a hurried, busy schedule. Well, I mean, as a pastor, my schedule is very busy on Sundays from 5 a.m. usually till 9 or 10 p.m. But it's a day that is intended to be off. And why not spend it in hospitality? Why not spend it in fellowship? Why not spend it in just being merciful and inviting people over and cultivating I hate the expression, but cultivating a culture like that in your church? You know, I sometimes think that people revert to football games. Well, I know people love sports, so to pry their heart away, but they revert to sports games, or I'm just going to go do this, go do homework or whatever. I'll just get some work done because they're bored. Because they don't know what it is to enjoy the company of the saints, and they don't know what it is to fellowship. They don't know what it is to open their homes and to invite people in and to be a place for a meal and a conversation. So that's one thing, like that's our regular practice. I think hardly a Lord's Day passes. And by hardly, I mean, you know, you could count on one hand probably in a year. Where we don't try to have people over and just enjoy fellowship. And it usually ends up being the whole afternoon from the moment church gets over till we start our evening activities as a church. And, you know, my children have told me, I'm really thankful. I'm really thankful because my children have just told me, you know, when we grow up and we move out, this is what we're going to miss the most is Sunday fellowship. And we've just tried to encourage them. Well, just go and do the same, you know, do that when you're grown up. So I think that's a really, really good use of a Lord's Day in outside of worship to call the day a delight.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not only good for people like you, Kyle, who invite people in to your home to fellowship, but it's good for people who come in. I remember as a young Christian, Allison and I would get invited over to different people's houses on the Lord's Day. We had to travel about 45 minutes to church. So we'd go over there for lunch. And it's not just fellowship. I mean, it's learning. You learn so much about what it means to serve the Lord as you see people give of themselves and open up their home to hospitality. You see how families work. You know, as a young couple, I saw how parents dealt with their children. And so it was preaching and teaching of a different kind. It was a very practical way to learn, hey, this is what you do on the Sabbath day. Let's sing the Psalms together. Let's pray together. Let's sit around, you know, on couches and talk about what you heard at worship. And it was new to me. It was a foreign concept to spend your Sabbath day in that way. I mean, when I was a kid, it was, you get out of church at 10:30. I went to a restaurant. And went out to eat and then got home. And in the summer, I'd watch the Cubs play baseball on Sunday afternoon. And in the winter, I'd watch the football. It was just the way I was raised. And it opened up a whole new world to me to see how beneficial this day actually is and the rest that you get. And it is a rest of not just physically, but mentally and spiritually, just resting in Christ and resting with believers as we look forward to that great rest that we're going to have in eternity with Christ.
You know, I don't want to flatter anybody or make anybody blush, but Barry, I don't know if you remember or if you even know this. You and Miriam were actually super impactful for my family's trajectory on the Lord's Day. You know, when we became Presbyterian, we were committed to it, but we really enjoyed a day of doing, you know, after church, you know, we're just going to go take naps all afternoon. And you were in Grand Rapids once. And when I was a student there, and we invited you guys over, and we invited a couple other people from church, and it was one of the most, I just, to sit there and just talk, you and Miriam were just wonderful. And after you guys left, Rachel and I just went, oh man, like that's what could be replicated every week is times of fellowship with one another. So not to make you blush, not to flatter you, but I do sincerely, we owe you for that, because from that point forward, we really began trying to commit ourselves to saying, you know, let's have that. Like, let's have that every week where we get to sit in the company of friends and new people. You know, you and I hardly knew each other. I think that might've been the first time we met face to face. But it was such a blessing to both of us. And we thought, man, let's structure our home life in that way.
Well, that is the joy of it, is to be with God's people, not only as we worship together, but to have that fellowship and to take meals with one another and pray and share. And I remember that time as well. I remember you ministering as a pastor there to some of the people in your congregation. I remember a particular young man that ended up having an illness, and your ministry to him. He ended up passing away. So anyway, I think it's a part of the beauty of the Lord's Day. You know, you look in the Gospels and you see it's a day that Jesus was active with people. And in my studies on mercy, they've really taken me to the Lord's Day. And one of the places that I've just really appreciated is looking at the Westminster Directory of Public Worship. And on its section, the Sanctification of the Lord's Day, it talks about, you know, the times of public worship, and talks about repetition of sermons, which I tell the students doesn't mean the preacher preaches them again, but, you know, we sit down and talk about what the preacher preached, because it talks about the families. What did you hear? Catechizing, holy conferences. I think when we get together, and from anything from a church school class where we're learning more, or a Bible study, those kinds of things, prayer. But then it goes on to talk about that we should be filling this day visiting the sick, relieving the poor, and other such like duties of piety, charity, and mercy, accounting the Sabbath a delight. And again, I just mentioned, you know, the Lafayette Church has had a 40-year plus history of people from that congregation going to the local jail and just sharing Christ with others. I think it's a day to do things like that. It's a day there are widows, people who are so lonely. And I hear people all the time just talking about how you were just relating that, Kyle, how busy I am. But the Sabbath day should be a day where we can overcome some of that busyness and set our regular pleasures aside and give ourselves to caring for other people and visiting them. There are people in hospitals that are lonely, and they need us to show up. And the Sabbath is at least one of those days where we should be going. So I think, to me, that's when I hear, you know, someone talking about should we watch football on the Lord's Day or not. You know, it's easy just to kind of wag the finger at all the idolatry of it, and that's certainly there. But in one sense, it's taking something that can have some benefit. You know, there is pleasure in watching a football game. I thoroughly enjoyed watching University of Michigan win the national championship on a non-Lord's Day, but this year. But we're able to replace it with something of far greater spiritual value. And I know for myself and my family, really learning to call the Sabbath delight, as you guys were talking about, has been just such a means of growth and pleasure in the Lord through the years.
Yeah. You know, and I think, go ahead, Scott.
No, I'll let you go, and then I'll talk.
You know, and I think that's a good point, you know, because calling the Sabbath a delight, you know, even well-intended Reformed Presbyterian folk, you know, get really scared of the legalism boogie monster, right? And it's like it's you know, we're not being legalistic here. It's never legalistic to follow the law of God. Let's just state that. But it's also not just, you know, it is often framed in the list of do nots. And there are some do nots we really need to think through. But right, Isaiah is saying, you know, but positively it's to be a day of delight. And we need to demonstrate that to people. We need to invite people into that. We need to live that by example to show them it's not just a matter of not doing, but positively and even better is learning to value these things, you know, and to just put it out there. And I don't mean this in a snotty way, but, you know, there's the possibility that the things that God delights in, might not always be the thing that Kyle's heart delights in. And I need to recognize that for what it is. Mm-hmm. God delights when his people fellowship. God delights in hospitality. God delights when we show mercy to the shut-in, to the people in jail, to the people in the hospital. God delights when we give of ourselves. And that's the Sabbath is intended for that end. And so often, you know, in my life, I still need to pray, Lord, help me to delight in the things that you delight in. Because, you know, watching a football game is really fun. I'm not going to lie. It's really fun. But it's not on that day. It's not what God delights in. It's not, you know, God isn't sitting there saying, oh, please delight in the NFL today. But to delight in these works of mercy and grace and kindness and love toward other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember, Kyle, not to make you blush, but a couple of years ago, I was listening to one of your sermons on the Sabbath day. I wasn't listening to your sermon on the Sabbath day. You preached a sermon about the Sabbath day, and you brought up a really good point when somebody was challenging you on it. And I'll paraphrase, but who out there gets 2 weeks of vacation and says, I'm not going to take that. I'm not going to take my vacation time. You know, why? You know that you need rest. And the Lord has given us more than 2 weeks of vacation. He's given us 52 days of vacation every year. Why would you spurn that? And when you stop looking at the Sabbath as a, I can't do this and I'm not allowed to do that, and see it as, hey, I don't have to do this and I get to do that. It changes your mind, your mindset. It's not a burden. You know, it might take a little bit of extra planning on Saturday to make sure you have everything you need for Sunday. But when you're at home on Sunday and you get this day, and you get to have friends over and you get to, you know, invite the shut-in over or go over to their house and take them a meal. I mean, what a joy that is. That is a real break from the grind that many of us have day in and day out in this, as you said, very busy world. Why wouldn't a person want to take advantage of that? Not be lazy, but to do the rest or, you know, participate in the rest God has given us.
Yeah, and it's just so important to be using that time to serve other people. Jesus healed the man born blind, the guy with the withered hand. There's so many times where he was healing on the Sabbath day and actually getting in trouble for it. The guy at the Pool of Siloam, all of these people, he was showing that the Sabbath was really the ushering in of the new creation, the redemption that he's brought into this world. And we should be thinking about not only people in the church, but also outside the church. Again, we talked about the visiting of jails, going and talking to a neighbor, finding ways to serve. We don't really have time to get into this, but in some of the church plants I've been involved in, it's really the Lord's Day evening that's helped those church plants really get solidified, because we would meet for Bible studies and later worship services. And I've just seen the Lord's Day evening be a gathering place to start new works. But that takes a lot of devotion to be able to organize your day in such a way that you're going to commit to that. And it wasn't just me. It was lots of people in the church being willing to do that. I remember when we were planting the church up in Elkhart and the congregation in Kokomo was helping. There were sometimes more people from Kokomo at that service 2 hours away than there were in Elkhart, just because they were committed to seeing that work get started. And so I think when we see people really giving themselves to the Lord's kingdom, particularly on the Lord's day, that's just an exciting, refreshing, encouraging thing to see. And we don't realize, like, I know that when certain people don't show up for the worship service, I should say certain people, really anyone, when there are members of the church who decide not to show up, like for the Lord's Day evening, and I know that they don't have a really good reason for not doing so, and maybe I even know that they're doing other things, that's just discouraging, that they're not there with us. And I just want, you know, God's people to be there with us. I don't go try to chide them into being there, but I do try to highlight what they're missing. Mm-hmm. Well, we've probably come to the end of our time. Is there any last bits of wisdom you want to toss our way?
Well, to reemphasize from the Daniel Howe interview we did on his book, it's a good day to feast. as well. Mm-hmm. You know, part of the enjoyment of the Sabbath is actually living out and enjoying the fruit of the labors of the Lord, first and foremost, in Christ's death and resurrection, but also just to begin our week enjoying that which God has given. And I think Daniel's book was really good because it really set forth a positive emphasis on that. And feasting is always fun. Who doesn't love to eat good food? And I think that's a good use of the day as well.
Yep. Feasting on the Lord, feasting on the blessings he's given us, feasting with one another. Well, yeah.
And just to kind of bounce off what you said too, it's easy for us to point, wag fingers, chide people who don't show up for Sunday night or who may do things that we don't approve of.
Scott, do you show up on Sunday nights? Are you just launching into this to be like, oh, I don't go on Sunday nights?
I go on Sunday nights. You know what? Okay. We do? We don't have a worship service on Sunday nights, but we do pray and we have pancakes. So we feast on pancakes. I love it. I mean,
that's
who
great.
Doesn't like pancakes and eggs and singing the Psalms and praying together, right?
That's great. I'm sorry. I interrupted you. Keep going. I just want to make sure. Go on.
But, you know, I do think it's important for us to really express what people are missing on the Sabbath day. You're not missing a football game. If you're not participating in the Lord's day as the Lord wants, you are missing out on a world of opportunity, a world of good food, good fellowship, and, you know, good service to others. So, you know, I would encourage people, don't look at it as you're giving something up, but that you're getting something in return.
Yes. Well, good admonishments at the end, encouragements at the end. This is, again, Three Guys Theologizing. We are glad that you have joined us. As you can hear from this podcast, often our topics are spawned by what listeners send in to us. So if you'd like to do likewise, send a potential topic into us, you can do that by writing us at 3gt.xyz@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to previous episodes, you can go over to our webpage at 3gt.xyz. And actually, there's a search button on there. And if you just want to hear more episodes about the Sabbath day, if you would just search for that topic, you will find several that we've done in the past, looking at this from different angles, as has been mentioned. Thank you for joining us on this episode of Three Guys Theologizing.